You're listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. Joining us today in studio, Dave Eisenstatter with the Daily Hampshire Gazette, and on the line, Ron Chmielis, columnist with the Springfield Republican newspaper. Welcome to you both.
Glad to be here.
Thanks, guys.
We start this week with the latest in the battle for casino business between Connecticut and Massachusetts. Officials in Connecticut this week raised their estimates of how much money the state could receive from slot machines from the two tribal casinos. The reason? A state spokesman says the recently opened MGM casino in Springfield may not be impacting Connecticut's revenues as much as officials anticipated. So, Dave, is this a sign of trouble in Springfield or too much pessimism in Connecticut?
It could be. I mean, good on for the Connecticut officials for their conservative financial planning. It's certainly a boon to them. But in Springfield, this is yet another promise unfulfilled for the MGM casino. Not the best for MGM, no.
In a statement, Ron, to the Republican, MGM officials did not directly address the situation, instead choosing to tout their business. What are your thoughts on this situation?
Well, my overall thoughts, I'd like to see at some point the Connecticut business and the Massachusetts business not linked to each other and the success not judged by how much it hurts the other. That might be a utopian viewpoint. If it hasn't changed the landscape of gambling in New England, I do think it's made an impact. I also don't know if we know the limit for Massachusetts gambling yet. It's certainly not great news for MGM, but I wouldn't push panic buttons. I do think in Connecticut's case, it is good news. They won't have to restructure their whole way of doing things just to compete with Massachusetts. And that might help MGM in the longer run.
Also this week, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker released his version of the new state budget. The proposal calls for $1.1 billion in additional school funding over 7 years, much of it targeted to economically disadvantaged students. The executive director of Citizens for Public Schools, Lisa Geisbond, says the plan isn't enough.
It doesn't reflect the urgency of the situation. The students who have, you know, for years lacked librarians and social workers and counselors and nurses. They can't wait.
And Springfield State Representative Carlos Gonzalez said before Baker's plan was unveiled that schools in Springfield were underfunded by $90 million a year. Ron, what do you think about this argument that Baker's plan takes too long to put into place and isn't adequate?
Well, I think Lisa Geisbond's argument was good because it was objective. I think some of the criticism of Baker's plan has been very politically based and opposition based, but she has a specific problem with it, and that's the length of time it takes to implement. In fairness to Baker, you got to be able to pay for it. You got to be able to sustain it. And I know that's not something educators want to hear, but it is the reality of political and educational life. But she's right. 7 years is more than half the time a kid is going to spend in school, and that's too long to wait. That is a fair debating point. But there's a long way to go on this process, and I know that's going to be examined.
Dave, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, well, I think it's unfortunate that the legislature hasn't been more aggressive on this. I think yet again, the Senate passed a really solid bill based on education funding. The House stood in its way and it didn't get passed. Now we're looking at a new budget plan that Baker's putting forward. And I do think that it makes sense that it should be implemented in a quicker way. I also think that it was a little bit disappointing to see some of the higher education funding issues. Under President Robert Carrot, a few years ago, there was a 50-50 model where 50% of UMass or other public higher education places, the students would pay half, the state would pay half. It's down to something like 20-80 under this new plan, and that's going in the very wrong direction, and students need help with their tuition. Tuition is too high in this state.
We go from state finances to political finance. The latest campaign finance filings with the state show former Massachusetts Senate President Stan Rosenberg has been actively using his campaign accounts since leaving office last year. He spent more than $70,000 on legal fees during that time, $2,800 on phone bills, and $600 on a hotel for a legislative conference in California. And according to the state, these funds can be used to further one's political future, even though they may not be in office any longer, and not for personal reasons. Dave Rosenberg, of course, resigned amid a sexual assault scandal involving his husband. Any thoughts on how the Amherst Democrat has spent the money?
It's very interesting. That note on political future, that's very vague. I think that this might be some impetus for some legislators and our courts to really look at what that means, your political future. You could argue that Rosenberg had this lawsuit against him. It was dismissed. Maybe that was in part by these tens of thousands of dollars he spent on legal fees, and maybe that would help his political future. Is that the best argument to go forward on? Probably not. There should be some more rigorous standards around this political future language.
Ron, what do you think about this idea that Dave brings up that maybe how campaign finance funds are spent after people leave office needs another look?
Absolutely. It needs more than another look. It needs to change. I think this is wrong, wrong, wrong. And I think it's legal, but I think it's still wrong. People didn't donate to campaigns. I assume they don't donate so that a person can defend themselves with legal bills. Now, the law allows them to do that. The law needs to be looked at. The legislature has now made some changes in their harassment policies. They're trying to be more, they're being forced to be more responsive to what the public expects. This is exactly the type of thing that sours the public on public officials. And is Rosenberg wrong? No, not from a legal standpoint, but he should be wrong. It shouldn't be this way. And it needs to be looked at and needs to be looked at immediately.
And finally, the American Hockey League's All-Star events will be held in Springfield on Sunday and Monday. And 3 years ago, that seemed pretty unlikely when the Falcons left for Arizona, but the Thunderbirds club that replaced them has been more successful at the box office than its predecessor, and so far on the ice this year as well. Ron, you've covered Springfield hockey for a long time. Is having the All-Star game here a sign of stability for pro hockey in Springfield?
Absolutely. This is a great story and a great moment because those of us who really cared about this, those few of us a few years ago, didn't really think this day would happen. It looked like there would be no team in Springfield. Now, not only is the team in Springfield, the league offices remain in Springfield, and the showcase is here. This franchise is ahead of schedule in public acceptance, and this is a great validation of it. I think this is a great moment to be proud.
Dave, I'll give you the final word. What do you think about this event coming to Springfield?
Well, I have to say I'm not a big follower of hockey, but I think it's great that it's happening here, and hockey has been an exciting sport in Western Massachusetts these past few months, so that's great.
All right, Dave Eisenstatter of the Daily Hampshire Gazette and Ron Chmelis of the Springfield Republican, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, guys.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And remember, you can catch us at any time, wherever you get your podcasts, or at nepr.net/podcast hub. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.